Good morning. Good to see you this morning. Again, I welcome the visitors here. It's good to have you with us. Appreciate your interest in spiritual things. Yesterday, I was asked to speak at a lectureship up in Nashville dealing with the seasons of life. And they gave me two assignments, two subjects to teach on. And some of you went with me yesterday. And so for those of you who went with me and already heard this lesson yesterday, you get to hear it again. You can see if I made any improvement on it. But I want to share the lessons with you. And I don't know if we'll get all the way through the first one. I had planned to do the first one this morning and the other one this evening, but we may have to split up this one. You ever seen kids play in a mud puddle? It's especially interesting to watch kids play in a mud puddle right after services on Sunday morning. They go off the parking lot there and they find a good wet spot in the grass and just having a blast there. And there's a certain innocence there, and it's watching that innocence brings joy to us because it's so carefree. They're not worried about that Mama had to go to three different department stores to find that dress, and that dress cost $35. And they're not at all concerned of whether Tide will get out those stains or not, or whether by them splashing up and down it's going to get mud in little Billy's eye over there who's sitting beside the mud puddle, and if that's going to require a trip to the emergency room or going to create some kind of tragedy in his life over this. They're just lost in the moment. It's carefree. They're not used to thinking about being responsible for a lot of these things that as adults we automatically think of. Oh, that probably costs money. Well, that we had to do work to get this. It's going to get dirty. We're not going to be able to do that. This could create this kind of problem. And so there's a certain amount of, freedom in childhood that we don't experience in adulthood. That carefree time in life, and that's a good thing most of the time. Now, there are some generations that don't get to enjoy that carefree life as long as others. You remember back in the 30s, well, you may not remember back in the 30s, but you've been taught about in the 30s, that there was a period of time where our nation was just in the grip of economic depression. And children of the 30s didn't have the same lengthy childhood that children of later generations would have. As a matter of fact, they had to grow up pretty fast because they had to assume a lot of responsibility in the family. Their parents were doing everything they could do to make ends meet, and they had to chip in and do their part, and they had to learn to share a bed. They had to learn to share toys. They had to learn to share food. They had to learn to share the responsibilities of the family and be involved in that. And they learned to work hard at an early age, and they learned to be responsible and to sacrifice for others. And it's interesting that as this generation grew up, they grew up to be one of our nation's hardest working and most giving and self-sacrificing generation of any that we've known of. As a matter of fact, as they grew up, you remember Tom Brokaw, he coined the term for this generation, the greatest generation. And the reason that he felt that way is because this generation would grow up, first of all, when their families were threatened by invasion. They enlisted in record numbers to go and to offer their lives, if necessary, to protect their families in this country. We owe our freedom to them. Those that came back from the war came back, and because of their work ethic and their willing to give and to sacrifice, and they knew how to work, they helped propel the economy of this nation to an economic boom of the 50s. And by the time that the greatest generation was having children of their own, the economy was good. It was a time of peace. And they began to look at their children, and what do parents often do? I want you to have what I never was able to have. And so they bought them bicycles with little bells that rung on them, and they tried to shield them from the responsibilities. Most of those kids didn't have to share a bed. They didn't have to share toys. They didn't have to share food. There was plenty and abundance of that. And the parents wanted to give that to them and wanted to shield them from those responsibilities that they had at such an early age. And what ended up happening, as time went on, this generation not only got to enjoy childhood and were shielded from those responsibilities that their parents had at an early age, but their parents shielded them from those responsibilities longer than any generation in the history of our nation up to that point. And so even into early adulthood, this next generation was still enjoying a lot of the carefree and responsibility-free days of youth. even though by now they were in their late teens or early 20s. One of the mottos of the 60s and the 70s that kind of typified the culture of that day is, you do your thing and I'll do my thing. In other words, there's not a lot of responsibility. As a matter of fact, responsibility almost became a dirty word. We're not into responsibility, we just kind of let things happen. And we just enjoy life and we just go with the flow. In one generation, the culture of our nation changed dramatically. As a matter of fact, the 60s and the 70s in a 20-year period of time may be the greatest change in our nation of the history so far. Let me just give you one interesting statistic that maybe typifies what happens. As a family goes, so goes the culture. The greatest generation had a divorce rate less than 20%. That generation that had to grow up kind of fast, you know, had to take on responsibilities early, had to learn to sacrifice, had to learn to work. Divorce rate less than 20%. Their children, that generation that had the luxury of the carefree days of childhood continuing on into early adulthood, that divorce rate more than doubled. As a matter of fact, it jumped to 52%. Which is still the record in our nation as the highest divorce rate. Over half of those families dissolved in divorce. Now, let me clarify something while we're saying this. That was the highest peak of the divorce rate. It's been declining since then. Don't let that fool you. Because all that means is less people are choosing to get married. They're just living together now. So there's not a legal divorce involved. Separation rate would be as great, if not greater now. But let me suggest something that I think is a theory of mine, but a theory of a lot of sociologists and psychologists as well. And that is, when people enter into adulthood without outgrowing childhood, it's disastrous for the individual, for the family, and for the culture as a whole. And you know what? By the way, that was the generation of my parents. My generation did even worse. We took even longer to grow up and to accept responsibility. And according to what we see signs of, the next generation may be even worse than we. Let me give you an example. In USA Today, now this was an article September 2004, so it's several years old now. It stated, today's 20-somethings won't have the lives their parents had, and that's okay by them. They're going to school longer, delaying marriage and children, job hopping and apartment swapping. They're also moving back after college to save money, traveling to faraway places and to work, and generally taking more me time to decide what they want to do with their futures. Researchers, sociologists, and psychologists say this is a new phase of life, only recently acknowledged, that covers this gap between adolescence and adulthood, and they've coined the term for it, youthhood. So now you have adolescence, and you have adulthood, and in between you have youthhood. Well, here's what they say about it. The traditional adulthood of duty and self-sacrifice is becoming more and more a thing of the past. Now, as Christians, when you hear that, you hear those who study our culture saying this is what's happening to our culture, that traditional adulthood of duty and self-sacrifice is becoming more and more a thing of the past. How does that strike you as a Christian? Well, let's think about it. What did Jesus teach about duty and self-sacrifice? You remember His disciples? And they were fighting about who was the greatest. And He called them aside and He said, you know, the Gentiles, the people of the world, when they get in a position of authority, what they demand is that people serve them. But it's not to be that way among you. Among those who are Christians, that's not the way it's going to be. He says, yet among you it's not to be so, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. In John chapter 13, He visually demonstrated this. Here is the one they believe to be the Christ, the Son of the living God. And He takes a towel He girds himself with a towel and he gets a pan of water and he bows down before them and begins to wash the disciples' feet. And of course, Peter is repulsed by this idea. No, Lord, you're not going to wash my feet. You're the Christ. You don't take on the form of a servant. And Jesus said, let me wash your feet. Peter finally submitted to it and allowed it. But then Jesus said, you call me teacher and Lord, and you say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done. And then he goes on to say, you know, a servant is not greater than his master. If I, your master, have done this, then you don't need to think yourself too big to do this either. We're called to serve and to be dutiful. In other words, the change in our culture that's taken place is contrary to what Jesus is telling us we need to be as Christians. Let me read one other passage, Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 through 7. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. And let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but for the interest of others. And let this mind be in you which was in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and took on the form of a servant. That's what we're called to be. So what's taking place in our culture and what's taking place with our young people who are in youthhood is contrary to what the Lord is telling us our character needs to be. And that should be disturbing to us. You know, babies are incredibly selfish. They just seem to be born that way. They don't do anything for anybody else, and they expect everybody to do everything for them. And they'll scream and pitch a fit if you don't. You get to be a toddler, and toddlers are not much better. As a matter of fact, we're really working with toddlers, and we're trying to tell, no, now you share your toys. And a toddler says, mine! There's not a lot of giving there. There's not a lot of understanding there. We're working with them. We're trying to help them to understand. Now, we get up to an adolescent. By the time a person is an adolescent, here's something that they should learn. Socially, they have learned to fake being selfless. In other words, we've learned the polite thing to do. The polite thing to do is, we're supposed to share, and we're supposed to do this, and we're supposed to be courteous, and that type of thing. And the yanking toys out of people's hands and yelling, mine, is kind of, we've got that out of them. But now I just want you to think back when you were in junior high, early high school. What did you spend most of your time thinking about? How can I help things go more smoothly around the house? I wonder if it'd help Mom out if I washed dishes today. Is that what you spent most of your time thinking about? There may be some exceptions to that. You may have grown up quickly. But for most of us, what we thought about is we thought about what we were going to do. And we were thinking about, oh boy, I can't wait till I get done with these responsibilities so I can go do what I want to do. And our life revolved around our activities, whether it was sports or hobbies or whatever it may be. We wanted to have the big event of the day may have been setting a new high score on the video game. About us. And we get a little bit older and we're still concerned about toys. The toys may have four wheels and require liability insurance, but we're still thinking about our toys. Socially, we've learned to look like we're not very selfish, but most of us at that stage in life are still pretty much about ourselves. First Corinthians 13 and verse 11, Paul says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, I understand in the context here, 1 Corinthians 13, he's not exactly talking about the subject that we're talking about in this lesson. But he says something there that's important for us to understand. Something changes when we become adults. Our life can't stay the same. We can't be that person who is about ourselves when we become adults. We've got to put some things away. And that's not happening in our culture anymore. It's not expected in our culture anymore. And it's going to be problematic for Christians to overcome that. And so we need to spend some time thinking about that and talking about that. If you're in youthhood, anywhere in your late teens, early 20s, I want you to peek around the corner. And I want you to see what's right around the corner waiting for you. Because a lot of times we realize this is maybe coming, but we don't realize how quickly it's coming. You know what's most likely going to happen if you're in your late teens, early 20s? What most likely is going to happen in your life in the next 5 to 10 years is you are probably going to get married. You may not, but most likely you will. Now, I want you to notice what the Scripture tells us about our lives as a husband or a wife. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 5. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 5. Now again, I'm assuming that you're a person that's spiritually minded. I'm assuming you're a person that wants to follow God's Word. And so that's the approach that we're taking here. Ephesians chapter 5, let's look at verse 22. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. And He's the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Now, do you see what is involved here? If you are a young lady, late teens, early 20s, most likely, what's right around the corner for you is taking your will and submitting your will to a husband. Just as you would to the Lord. In everything. You ever read Proverbs 31, ladies? I know you have. Proverbs 31, the worthy woman. Go through and look at her character. How much time did she have for selfish activities? How much concern was she about dwelling on, what can I do for myself? How much me time do I have? How much... You look through that list, and she was about her family and serving and contributing. Very self-sacrificing all the way through that. That's what's involved in it. In just a few years, young ladies, you're going to be managing a home with all of the daily tasks and responsibilities that are given to that. And I'll just tell you, now, I want to be clear with both of these. That's not going to be torture. As a matter of fact, that'll be some of the best years of your life. And it will be lovely. But there is no room in it for childish selfishness. It just won't work. It will not be lovely years if you are still childish and still demand that, well, I need to have stuff for me and it's about me and people should be serving me. It won't work. God didn't design it to work. He designed for you to grow up and to get married. And the marriage works after you've grown up. After you've learned not to be childish in these things. Let's continue on there in Ephesians. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her, that He might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the Word, that He might present her to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Do you see what this is saying? Husbands, young men, next few years, probably going to get married. You know what's going to be involved in that? It's going to be very much about self-sacrifice. It's going to be very much about giving of yourself, just as Christ gave Himself for the church. You're giving yourself for your family. It's not about you. It's not about, hey, honey, bring me my supper. It's about you serving. So that your family can be the very best it can be. Just as Christ gave Himself so the church can be pure and holy and spotless and be what God wanted it to be, you're giving yourself. It's a leadership role. But you're responsible for the well-being of your family. You're going to be a provider for the physical things of your family. You're going to be the spiritual leader of your family. That responsibility is going to fall on you. If there's a problem in the family, guess whose fault it is? Well, it's her fault. She's not dealing with the kid. It's your fault. You're the leader of the house. The responsibility is for you to lead your house. There is no room for selfishness. There is no room for childishness. Is that torturous? No. It'll be some of the best years of your life. But there's not room for immaturity there. And so the reason that I point this out is that that's right around the corner. You need to be prepared for that. Those first few years of marriage are going to be very, very difficult if you are not prepared for that. If you still have that childishness in you, if you haven't put away those childish things, if you've entered into adulthood and still acting like a child. And so those things have to be put away. So right now in youthhood is the time to really work on that and to be involved in that. So whether you begin a family or not, youthhood is a time to put away childish tendencies and to live your life for learning how to serve, learning how to sacrifice. And one of the things we have to do in that is we have to learn to tell ourselves no. And that's hard to do. That's the thing that children have the struggle with, and that we have to learn to overcome. We have to learn to deny ourselves. And isn't that really what being a Christian is about? Is denying ourselves? Did not the Lord say, anyone who wants to follow me, if you would desire to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me? You can't be a Christian if you don't master this one. And so we have to learn to deny ourselves. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22, Paul told Timothy, who was a young man in youthhood, he said to him, flee also youthful lust. There are some things at this period of your life, your late teens, early 20s, that are going to be a greater temptation for you now than they may be later. It's not that they won't be a temptation later, it's just that right now you may be particularly vulnerable and susceptible to them. And you need to know that, and you need to learn to stay away from those things. You need to be careful of that. A number of things that we could talk about with this, and I'll just look at some of them. I don't know how much time we have left here, but I'll take maybe another 5 minutes and get into this and talk about it just a little bit. One of the things you almost always think of, anytime I always ask, what do you think some youthful lusts are? Whether it's old people or young people, this is almost always the first answer. Well, sexual passion. Sexual sin. That's very strong during this stage of our life. And so here is this passion that we have, and yet a lot of times we haven't learned to master telling ourselves no. And so a lot of mistakes are made. Turn over to the book of Proverbs. Look at Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7. There, this is mentioned so many times. By the way, the book of Proverbs is written by Solomon, wisest man to ever live. And he's writing the book of Proverbs to his son, a young man, probably in youthhood. And he's trying to prepare his son for what it lies ahead. And he's saying, during this stage of your life, here is what you need to be doing. You need to be growing. You need to be developing. You need to be watching out for these things. And one of the things that he mentions over and over and over again is sexual temptation. I just want to read one passage, about passion. In chapter 7, in verse 6. Let's start there. For at the window of my house, I looked through the lattice, and I saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a man devoid of understanding. So here's Solomon, and he's sitting out on his porch there, and he's looking through the lattice work, and he views a young man in youthhood. And he's just observing what's happening. You ever been to the mall, and people watch, you know, and just kind of, you notice what's going on. All right, well, here's what's happening here. Verse 8. He passed along the street near her corner. He took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. And she caught him and kissed him. And with an impudent face she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I've paid my vows. I have come out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, covered coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and alloys and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband's not at home. He's gone on a long journey, and he's taken the bag of money with him, and he will come home on an appointed day. And with her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. And with her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till the arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would take his life. flee youthful lust. And here's Solomon talking to his son, and he's saying, son, it's going to sound like such a good idea. It's going to be so tempting. You're going to run into situations, and there's going to be so much desire there, and you are going to want to fulfill those desires. And let me tell you, you need to tell yourself no. Let me tell you about a young man that I saw that couldn't tell himself no. He couldn't control his passions, and it killed him. It destroyed him. Look at verse 24. Now therefore listen to me, my children, and pay attention to the words of my mouth. He's not just talking to his son, he's talking to all of us. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. Do not allow yourself to give in to that temptation. Control yourself, for she's cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Oh, it won't happen to me. I know how to control myself. Really? Well, you ever thought it would happen to King David? Happened to David. You think you're spiritually ahead of David? Think you've got that type of fortitude? Don't count on it. Don't count on it. Better people than you have fallen to this sin. And that's exactly what Solomon is saying. Don't take this lightly. You have to learn to... And by the way, do you notice here? He doesn't just say, hey, you know, be really tough. Go and place yourself right in that situation. Just go there and talk to her. Flirt with her a little bit. And then tell yourself no. He knows that won't work. He says, don't even go near her house. Don't flirt with it. The way you tell yourself no is not get in the situation and hope you have enough resistance, or you can resist the temptation once you're there. He says, don't get in it. That's the way you avoid it. But you have to learn to do that. And he's telling the young people, be careful about this. All right, I don't know if this is a good stopping place or not. Yeah, we're going to stop there. Several other things that I think that this is a time that we need to... This is just one passion or one temptation that we have in youth. There are some others that are every bit as strong as this. And we'll look at those this evening. And then we're going to talk about some things that we need to do in order to overcome those and to grow up to be the type of people that we need to be. And I think this is a very, very important lesson for you young people. That's what it was designed for. But at the same time, you see the application. These things are there all the way through life. And we need to be diligent all the way through life in making sure that we are growing up to be what the Lord would have us to be. This morning, if you will, go ahead and take your psalm book and open it up to the song selected as a song of invitation. 431. Very fitting, Jordan. Thank you. None of self and all of thee. Part of growing up spiritually is getting to the point where we realize, Lord, I'm willing to turn this over to You. I'm willing to allow You to be Lord of my life. Let me tell you, as we sing this song and as we go through it and we talk about this, I want you to think about yourself. What stage are you at? Four different stages mentioned in this song. Where are you at in this? Are you still living your life for yourself? Is it still about you? Or have you gotten to the point where you're willing to give yourself as a living sacrifice to the Lord? This morning, if you realize, I need to do that. And you have the faith to do that. You know, God will take care of me. If I will truly trust Him, if I will truly depend upon Him, if I will follow through in obedience to Him, He will take care of me. That now's the time to come in that faith. Turn away from those things you know are contrary. Confess Him as Lord of your life. Be baptized to have your sins washed away. Be raised up to walk that newness of life. How's it different? You look the same, but you're not the same. You're living for a different purpose now. You're living with a different master now, a different Lord. If we can help you in doing that, would you come while we stand, while we sing?